Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz, your host here with you. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City. Hey, I'm not going to even say the unofficial start of Mardi Gras and Carnival season. We are in it, friends. We are in the thick of it. Here we go. Here we are. Pretty much every day, we got that stuff kind of going on. We got the parades going. Got to start paying attention where you park your car, where you're trying to drive to, where you're trying to go to. What do we have going on actually coming up? Let's talk a little bit about that. Let's see. Well, speaking of today's show, we're going to go right this way. Tomorrow in the quarter, Crew of Cork. And on today's show, we're going to have Justin Baldwin, who is the founder of Justin Winery out there in Paso Robles, California. That is a wine region that is really ascending these days out in California, really anywhere. And Justin Winery has been doing quite well for themselves. They were, I believe, in 2015. Maybe we'll get that answer for you when Justin is on. But they were the winery of the year in Wine Enthusiast. And Justin this year is the Grand Marshal of Crew of Cork, which is a walking group that goes through the quarter primarily. That's at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Crew of Oshun, 6 o'clock tomorrow there, uptown. And now that Napoleon Street's been fixed, they're going back to that old traditional route that they are following right behind them. Crew of Cleopatra over in Metairie. If you're out that way to the west, Crew of Excalibur, Crew of Athena at 7:30. And over on the North Shore, Crew of Eve in Mandeville, of course, Saturday. Then this is really when we start to get going. Man, there's too many to list. You can go to MardiGrasNewOrleans.com. They list all the parades. Sparta, Pygmalion, or Uptown, the kind of headlines, the Uptown cruise going on later on in the day. Of course, in the Marigny, two of my favorites, T-Rex, which means short for Petite Rex, Little Rex going on, and then a Crew of Chewbaccas. So T-Rex is at 5 o'clock in the Marigny, Crew of Chewbaccas, not to be missed, always at 7. I don't know who their Grand Marshal is. Last year was Peter Mayhew, who, of course, was Chewbacca in the Star Wars film, so who's more appropriate than that? A lot of fun that way. And then, well, we got Crew of King Arthur and Merlin uptown on Sunday, Crew of Dionysus and Slidell, Crew of Barkus in the French Quarter, also one not to be missed. A lot of fun, 2 o'clock on Sunday. So we just kind of roll from here, friends. And hey, we're right in the thick of it. It is Carnival. Having a conversation today with my good friend Tim McNally, who hosts the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show. And we're talking about how people don't really understand the fact that everything shuts down here starting about Thursday or Friday. And as Tim said, nobody cares. Meaning, if you want something to get done, if you can't figure out that you're trying to do something work-related or somebody's trying to get a hold of you from out of town because you're doing something for work, you're not going to get an answer until Wednesday at the earliest. People just don't really get the fact that we kind of shut down. We do the Mardi Gras thing. This is what we do. This is how it goes. This is how we roll. And I don't look at my email after Thursday. And actually, probably worth mentioning, we may do a show next Thursday, and it'll just be a Mardi Gras happening, or we may not. We may run a rerun next Thursday. I haven't figured that out yet because I may shut down on Thursday and not look at my email until next Wednesday. We will certainly do a show the Thursday after Mardi Gras because that's already kind of set up. But I'll let you know. Check us out on social media, NOLA Drinks, on all the major social media channels. You can find that there. But that's kind of how we do, friends. I mean, here we go. We're in the middle of Carnival season. That means that the world's going to come to a grinding halt outside of Carnival itself and Mardi Gras itself starting at the end of next week. And we kind of ramp up through the weekend here and all that good stuff. So just, you know, if you're listening to the podcast and stuff, letting you know, if I become out of touch, if I seem lost to you, if I'm not being sensitive to your needs and you're not in New Orleans, I apologize. I'm doing Carnival. Friends, you maybe have seen that the latest James Beard semifinalists have been announced. The James Beard Foundation Awards, which is the very noteworthy James Beard Foundation, which honors those in the restaurant business and service business, hospitality industry, as far as restaurants and bars go. A very prestigious award that goes on every year. And we sort of go through different rounds here. And the semifinalists have been announced. And of course, as it always should be, New Orleans is incredibly well represented in a general sense, and also, of course, in the regional sense, which we fall into the South region. But a couple highlights here. Best new restaurant, Turkey and the Wolf there uptown. That's Mason Herford and Lauren Holton. That is a cool place, man. Great sandwiches, great cocktail bar, great salads, a lot of fun. Somebody has said to me, it's like glorified stoner food. Okay, there you go. It's kind of that. But it's really, really good. Great cocktail program. My good pal, Basil, she's a bartender there. Go check that out. Outstanding chef, Donald Link, of course, from the Link Restaurant Group, nominated also in that program. Outstanding bar program. Two great places here in New Orleans. Cure, which many credit, probably rightfully so, being the original craft cocktail bar. In town, bringing that sort of new wave of craft cocktails. Of course, if you listen to the show, we know we talk about the history of New Orleans. We talk about the history of cocktails in New Orleans. And I always make the argument that New Orleans is sort of the original or one of the original craft cocktail cities, and that really never went away. But Cure and those guys, Neil Bodenheimer, Nick Dietrich, great establishment there on Ferret Street, uptown. They deserve to be nominated. And then the classic place, of course, Arno's French 75 bar there in Arno's on Bienville. And our friend Chris Hanna running the bar there, doing a fantastic job as always. So two very deserving places. If you don't know Cure on Ferret or Arno's on Bienville, go check out both of those places. You will not be disappointed as far as a bar and cocktail program goes. Outstanding pastry chef Kelly Fields at Willa Jean. Let's see, a couple other things. Emeril's Restaurant for outstanding wine program. And then also, I believe this might be the first time, Bacchanal Fine Wine and Spirits up there in the Bywater. Also a great wine shop, wine bar, restaurant, music venue, really cool place to go sit outside when the weather is nice. Great wine program. Go check them out. They're really worth checking out as well. Bacchanal Fine Wine. And then Rising Star Chef of the Year. I want to highlight this one. Zachary Engel at Shia, incredibly deserving. And then my good pal, Martha Wiggins, who is the executive chef of Sylvain there on Charter Street, right by Jackson Square, part of the LeBlanc Smith restaurant group. So you have to be, the general idea is you have to be 30, age 30 or younger. And Martha took over when another good friend of the show, Alex Harrell of Angeline, which is also on Chartist, a little further down up by Ursuline or so. When Alex was the founding chef, we're going to do a show on this actually with Robert LeBlanc, who owns the restaurant, and Alex, who remain good friends. We're going to talk about it on that show, and I'm getting a little off base here, but the idea when you have a founding chef that leaves a new restaurant to go start something, what does that mean to the restaurant? You go start your own operation. What does that mean? And that's great. It's going to be an interesting show. We'll do that next month. But what will also happen is that, or in this case, with Martha at Sylvain, she was the sous chef for Alex when he went to go start Angeline, and she basically was there from the beginning as well at Sylvain, and the LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group likes to promote from within. So Martha was given the reins there at Sylvain, and now we find, fast forward a few years, and we find that Martha is nominated for Rising Star Chef of the Year. Very proud of her. Best Chef South, Nina Compton of Compare Le Pan, Michael Galata of MoFo, Slade Rushing of Brennan's Restaurant, our friends Michael Stoltzfus and Kristen Essig, who are the co-chefs and owners of Coquette there uptown, Isaac Toops of Toops Meadery there in Mid-City on Carrollton, and Rebecca Wilcombe of Herb Saint here in the CBD. All people that are very worth noting, and congratulations to all of them being named finalists, or semi-finalists, I should say, for the James Beard Award. A lot of really, really good stuff there. So go check out all these places. If you go check out our Facebook page there on NOLA Drinks, you will find we shared some of these articles that were out written locally. Ian McNulty did a nice piece on this in the Advocate New Orleans. And then also, of course, the stuff that we shared from the James Beard Foundation themselves with the award winners, or I should say semi-finalists. Now, here's what happens to friends, is that we go from the semi-finalist process, and then we go to the finalist process where these awards are given. Some are given regionally, and then some are given overall nationally. And, you know, we always are very well represented, as we should be here in New Orleans in the semifinals. I think sometimes what happens, I'm going to soapbox here just briefly, is that when we get to the national level, that there can be a little bit of a bias towards places like New York and some things like that. And sometimes, you know, we don't necessarily see all of our wonderful friends and neighbors here in New Orleans maybe get the recognition that they deserve. But hey, that's an argument for another day. We'll see what happens. Again, a lot of deserving winners for the James Beard Foundation friends. We're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're going to be back with Justin Baldwin from Baldwin Winery. And then in the second hour, Mark Shetler, who is the president of the U.S. Bartenders Guild here in New Orleans, general manager of Bartonique, and also recently named Babe of the Week by the Babe Squad. Oh yeah, you don't want to miss that. Little Eddie Bo, friends, come on back.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till it's through our soul. It takes all that long. So it takes all that long.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Yeah, a little Grateful Dead, man. Let the good times roll. Classic New Orleans song done by one of my favorite bands. Yeah, I grew up in California, so there you go. Grew up seeing the dead. Chatting here, special guest here in the winery, Justin Baldwin from Justin Winery out there in Paso Robles. Welcome.
Well, glad to be here.
Yeah,
thanks absolutely. For inviting us.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to have you on the show. Happy to have you here in New Orleans. When did you all get into town?
Just yesterday, actually. We got in late yesterday. The strangest thing happened. We changed planes in Charlotte, North Carolina.
You went all the way over there and came all the way back.
We were in Tennessee before that.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And the plane landing preceding us hit a deer on the runway.
Oh, wow.
They closed down the airport. And you don't want to know the whole story, but we got here in time for a great dinner last night and reception, and we're here for all through tomorrow as well.
Now, hopefully they didn't serve venison at that dinner last night.
That would have been a little suspicious, but no venison.
Great. So now you are here for a good reason here in town. You're the Grand Marshal this year of the Crew of Cork Parade.
I am. Quite an honor.
Yeah, there you go. And now, have you? I take it you've been to New Orleans before. This isn't your first time.
Many a time. Okay. Many a time.
Now, have you been involved with the Crew of Cork before?
No, I haven't. Certainly not directly, although a lot of them drink Justin wine.
Yeah, there you go. Well, and so just for friends that are listening to, if you're here in New Orleans, you're listening to the show, you know what the crews are about. If you're listening to the podcast somewhere else, you may not. We do this during Mardi Gras. We call them crews, K-R-E-W-E. And this one, the Crew of Cork, has been around for a few years. It's a walking group, so no floats in this case. But it's all people that are generally wine fans.
Yes.
Right?
Major wine fans.
Major wine fans.
And new wine fans as well. Everyone's welcome.
Yeah, everybody's welcome. You just kind of got to like wine. I think it makes sense. Otherwise, you might think you're a little lost in that parade. But hey, it works. And then we always have with this group a Grand Marshal. And the Grand Marshal is typically somebody from the wine business most years. And that's you this year,
that
Justin.
Would be me.
Yeah.
That would be me.
That's great. Congratulations. Are you excited about it?
I am excited about it. This is actually the 17th year, is my understanding, that the crew has had this parade, and I'm honored to be the 17th Grand Marshal.
Yeah, fantastic. That's great. And that's Patrick's group there, Barvan, and I thought he was going to maybe be here, but he's on this show enough with our friend Tim McNally. So not my show, but Tim's show. Yeah,
Tim's an old friend.
Good,
old friend.
Absolutely. So now you guys are there in Paso Robles, which, as I was saying at the top of the show, certainly a wine region that those of us who are in the know have known about Paso for quite some time, but I think we see it ascending and being noted considerably in the wine, not just in California, but in the wine world in general.
That's true. When I started, this was 36 years ago, and I tell people when I opened Justin Winery, there were only five wineries there. Today, there's 400. So quite a bit of change there, and for that matter, across the whole wine landscape, across the states and around the rest of the world. But it's been very rewarding to watch Paso Robles come into its own.
Mm-hmm.
For many years, when I would be coming, was here 20-plus years ago selling wine, it was all based on just the wine, which is fine. The appellation meant nothing. Today, right. You're part of a well-known and, I think, highly regarded appellation, and so I'm pleased to see those the tables turn a little bit.
That's great, and that's a great point, Justin, because I think that your point's really well taken, that Paso, you know, a lot of places in California remind me of this, and the listeners of this show know I used to work in the wine business in Livermore. Oh. And so, you know, that's another place that I look at where people may not have that name recognition. So it was based very much, as you said, on the product. But now I think we start to see that change a little bit. Yeah. And Paso is a good example.
Absolutely. Carolyn Wente is a good friend.
Yeah.
And that whole Livermore Valley thing, she's done a great job. The whole area has done well. You know what? I think today the change in demographics, we see people are much more open for new experiences, which translates to new appellations, new producers, and all that you don't... Maybe in my generation, you wouldn't necessarily embrace as readily as is being today. So Paso Robles is on fire. 3 years ago, it was Appellation of the Year. Last year, I'm proud to say Justin was Winery of the Year.
That was in Wine Enthusiast,
Wine
correct?
Enthusiast Magazine.
Yeah, congratulations.
Right? Mm-hmm. Thank you. So it's been, I think, more and more recognized as and has come into its own. So
that's great. Fantastic. And you guys have been a pioneer there, as you mentioned. You didn't say it in so many words, but that's very true. Now, Justin, as you started out, then let's go back. We'll set the way back machine here a little bit. How did you get involved in the wine business personally?
Well, I was in the banking world, and I did, as a lot of bankers do, entertained a lot. Part of that entertaining involved wine, and I got hooked by the wine bug, if you will, and eventually decided I would get out of the wine world, excuse me, the banking world.
That was a smart decision. That makes a lot of sense. Oh, all right, there you go.
Excuse me.
It wasn't my humor that was making you laugh. It was a little, yeah, go ahead.
followed my a passion that I developed for wine. Initially wine and food, but wine definitely took over. And as I tell everybody, I violated the number one rule of winemaking. And I quit my day job and started making wine in the early 1980s in the Central Coast in California, in Paso Robles specifically. And that was 36 years ago, and it's been a great ride.
So what made you choose Paso Robles?
Well, if you want to get technical, three things. Soil, limestone soil, unique to that part of California, and no place else really in California, but the dominant soil profile you'll find throughout Western Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, it was enough water to get things started, but not so much water that my crop loads would be too heavy or too large. Thirdly, it was elevation. Our vineyards begin around 1,200 feet above sea level, go up to 2,000 feet or so. I tell people, my wife and I were last summer, we're over in Bordeaux. The highest elevation in Bordeaux is 59 feet above the river. That's
right,
it.
Right.
And in Napa, city limits of Napa are only 17 feet above San Francisco Bay. So these hillside vineyards, all the topsoils have eroded off over the years, exposing that limestone underlayment, enough water to get it go. So those are sort of technical reasons. The marketing reasons were pretty simple. 3 hours away are 25 million people in L.A.
Right, right.
That wasn't too hard to do. And last but frankly, more importantly for me, was the physical beauty of the area and the opportunity to be a pioneer, to be one of the original people and either make it or not.
Right.
Right. Your not didn't happen.
Right. Well, congratulations on that, too. You're still there. And, you know, back to the first part that you were talking about from the terroir perspective, you know, people that listen to this show are generally knowledgeable about what we're talking about with the wine business, and they're enthusiasts. We got a lot of people that are in the service industry and so on that listen to this show and the podcast in particular as well. And, you know, you mentioned the elevation part, which I think is really important to talk about because people will perceive California sometimes in Northern California as being very mountainous. And so we talk about the valley sides of Napa and these things. In Paso Robles, the elevation is a key part because you get good UV light exposure.
Yep.
And then you also get a nice diurnal swing. And what that means is that the 24-hour temperature swing between low and high, which high ripening, low acid flavor components, phenolics, that sort of thing, it's a nice place for that. And I think, as wine regions were carved out in California, it was one that was sort of waiting to happen. Do you think that's a fair characterization?
I think so. You know, if you go back historically, wine grapes were grown in Paso Robles before they were in Napa, mm-hmm. in Sonoma, yep. because when the Spanish missionaries came through, they started south and went north.
Right.
So there's been wine grapes here for 200 years. In the 30s, the dominant grape varietal, actually up until when I bought my vineyard, my land, which I converted to vineyard, Zinfandel was king, and there's still some great Zin vineyards there that are well over 100 years old. Head pruned mm-hmm. vines there. So no, it's definitely coming to its own, and for all the right reasons. Those are just my reasons, but 400 other people would not have followed had there not been that
right terroir.
Yeah. Exactly.
Justin, we're going to take a little break here. Sure. You stick around. Friends, we're going to take care of a little business here. Bottom of the hour break on the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Happy Carnival, everybody. Come on back.
Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
It's carnival time. Are you ready for parades, revelry, and the ultimate cocktail experience? Victory is located in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission is to preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy this holiday. Give us a call to book your next private event. 504-522-8664, 339 Barone Street.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
This is Christopher Icaza, general manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucouleurs. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's grand dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon dining room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for joining us, friends. Happy Carnival. A little bit of Kermit Ruffin's Rebirth Brass Band. Yeah, there you go. Gets you in the mood, doesn't it? Should. It should. If it doesn't, you're listening to something wrong. We're chatting with Justin Baldwin from Justin Winery in Paso Robles, California. Grand Marshal of Crew of Cork. Participating fully in Mardi Gras this year, Justin.
Absolutely, 100%.
That's good. Good to see you all in, just like that.
Absolutely. No, there's no other way, right?
We can't do it half-baked here, so you got to go all in. Fantastic. So we were talking a little bit about the background of the winery, your background, and we're tasting a little bit of the wine. You guys poured me some Sauvignon Blanc, I believe.
We have poured you some Sauvignon Blanc, which I'm proud to say is atypical in style. I mentioned in the last segment that we have limestone soil on hillsides, and this has grown up very high in those hillsides where the limestone is very dominant. And as a result, you pick up, and instead of on the palate, just the normal expression, the Sauvignon Blanc, the herbal grassy type qualities, you pick up some character that to me reminds me more of a white Bordeaux. There's some Simeon notes in there, some of that round melony honeydew cantaloupe. Mm-hmm. But there's none in there. It's 100% Sauvignon Blanc, tank fermented, tank aged.
Sauvignon Blanc is a varietal for stories that listeners know to the show near and dear to my heart for various reasons. I'll tell you during the next commercial break why. But and I noticed that's sort of nice. You said the earthy notes. There's a nice little hay note on there as well. Very nice. Nice acidity on this. Get some nice lemon zest and lime up front on it, which a good Sauvignon Blanc should do. And I'm assuming that, we were talking about the diurnal swing stuff, the temperature swing, that's prime time for Sauvignon Blanc. That grape needs that, wants that.
Yes, because you need the acidity to keep up with the sugars.
Exactly.
And that diurnal swing, which is almost double every night, our lows are half whatever the highs are in the previous day, lock in that acid. And that's very, very important to have that. This is the style of Sauvignon Blanc that we, of all our wines for that matter, we want our wines to add to dining pleasure. And you need the acidity to make that happen. In fact, what we've had to do with this wine is to only limit it to the primary fermentation. I don't know how much your listeners.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So the primary fermentation, the conversion of sugar to alcohol. We don't do the secondary conversion, the conversion of the malic to lactic acid, because we're growing these on these limestone soils, which are high basic pH alkaline soil. Mm-hmm. And we have minimum acids to begin with, and we don't want to diminish those anymore. So That's where we stop.
It's very nice, and when you have those growing conditions, and when you have fruit like this that's going to express itself like this, you don't need to do malolactic or secondary fermentation on the wine.
And we don't.
Yeah, and good move, Justin. So, and thank you, Brooke. Brooke, who's helping out here, pouring a little bit. What are we going to taste next?
The Cabernet.
This is our 2014 Cabernet Sauvignon from the Paso Robles Appellation. This is the backbone of Justin Winery. This is what we make the most of. I guess somewhere around 70% of our production is Cabernet Sauvignon. And it's very expressive of Paso Robles in that it's very approachable. The fruit is very forward. The tannins are present, but they're way to the back. They're not mouth cloyingly overdone here. And that's, we get good ripe fruit in Paso Robles.
Do you find, Justin, that you mentioned that Zinfandel was king originally in Paso. And more quality Cabernets, I think we see coming out of Paso. Are we finding that people are starting to discover that's the right place for it? I know it's probably an obvious question, but
here's the statistic for you, that there's more acreage planted in Cabernet Sauvignon and Paso Robles than there is in Napa. Yet the two areas are almost identical in terms of total planted acreage, about 40,000 acres each. But yeah, absolutely, we get great great ripeness in this cab. Cab's a late blooming fruit.
Mm-hmm.
We're always worried about frost at harvest time, or if we get enough accumulation during the growing season. So, but we seem to get consistent ripeness, and the flavor profile I just mentioned to you, it's classic Cabernet Sauvignon. You know, I was telling a group earlier today, it may or may not have interest to your listeners, that we're able to offer this at, I think, a very reasonable price, given the fact that land prices in Paso Robles are much more reasonable
right.
than elsewhere where Cabernet is grown. So we can make a similar quality, but offer it at, a much better value proposition, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's propelled this wine to be now the number four poured by the glass Cabernet Sauvignon across the United States.
Oh, really?
And that's the number two retail sold Cabernet over $20 a bottle nationwide.
What is your typical retail price point on this ballpark?
Low 20s.
Okay. And how much of this do you guys we're getting the nod from Abe over here, is helping out. We have a whole group of people here that are fact checking for us. So that's good stuff.
You need that with me.
So how much cab do you guys make typically a year, roughly case wise?
Well over 50,000 cases of Cabernet.
Okay, is it all estate stuff that you guys do across the board with your entire program?
The wines that you find on the shelf is almost all estate. Some of the fruit in this particular vintage is not all estate. Most of our non-estate wine, or varietals rather, are used in our wine club. We've got a very active wine club. In fact, one of the largest wine clubs in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Over 17,000 people in our wine club.
Wow, great.
So we make a lot of wines for them that they can't find in the store. Very, very limited production wines, which frankly are kind of fun as a winemaker to produce.
And you guys are working with some independent grower friends of yours and things like that too?
For many years, yes. Grapes, our vineyard relationship manager does a great job. She's been doing this now. Well, she's been in the business for about 20 years. She's done a great job. She replaced our former vineyard relations manager who went to Silver Oak. They pinched him and he's up in Napa now, but we're still friends.
Okay, that's all right. Selling the $120 bottle stuff. All right, fair enough. This is very nice Cabernet. I find it very approachable for low 20s, like you said. Wonderful.
Correct.
What's the barreling and all that kind of stuff?
What's unique about this wine is that we age this wine exclusively in American oak barrels, contrasted with French oak for all the other wines that Justin produces. And those American oak barrels, first of all, allow sort of a vanilla quality to the taste profile, but more importantly, they're less expensive by about 80% less expensive, and secondly, American species of oak are more porous and their cellular right. structure is less dense, so oxygen can transfer through the staves of the barrel and right. accelerate the oxidation and the aging of the wine. So we get this wine to the market earlier, more mature, more ready to be consumed, and matched up with some great food.
Very nice food wine, nice acid structure on this. I get some nice notes. There's a very nice cherry note, but not that maraschino cherry note, almost a black cherry note on that.
Yeah,
which is
more dark fruit. More.
Yeah,
more,
yes, dark definitely. Fruit note, and very, very nice there. So how much new American on this, roughly?
About 25% new.
Okay. Yeah, it's not heavy-handed by any stretch.
No, we don't. No, we want the fruit to express itself as forward and as boldly, but also softly with some elegance attached to it as well.
Yeah, this is great. I'm very obviously going to go great with steak. Going to go great with barbecue. I think very approachable.
Very much so.
That way, and I even think because of the fact that it's not heavy-handed on the oak and it's not over. It's not too hot. There's not too much alcohol on this either. Here in New Orleans, this is going to go really nicely with a nice red sauce, red gravy as well. I think some things would run that over in some cases, and in this case, I don't think that that's the case. And Brooke is standing here patiently waiting to pour us another wine. I'm going to do this. Okay, excuse me, you guys. We're doing a little dump cup there. So what are we pouring now here, guys?
The justification.
Okay, the justification, and that is?
This is a classic right bank Bordeaux blend, a Saint-Emilion style of Cabernet Franc and Merlot. This particular vintage is 58% Cabernet Franc and 42% Merlot. It's unlike the previous wine, however, it's aged in French oak barrels. 50% new French oak for 2 years. And during that time, along with the previous wine, the Cabernet Sauvignon, we don't filter. We don't filter any of our wines.
Okay.
Make a very, very big effort to not do so. I don't want to intrude in any way, or at least as minimal amount as possible on the wine. So unfiltered, unfined, aged in 50% new French oak for 2 years, and then bottle aged for another year prior to release. People ask me what my favorite Justin wine is. I tell them, this is it, Justification.
Yeah, it's very nice, Justin. I like it a lot. Very nice mouthfeel on this. Again, with 50% new oak, I don't find it heavy-handed. There is the mid-palate brings a very nice velvet characteristic to it that mm-hmm. I find to be very smooth. But it does also have a nice acid finish that doesn't get run over by the wood. It's a very well-balanced wine.
Cab Franc has, you know, the blueberry, violet, lavender notes to it, but the acidity in particular, I like. And especially, you know what's fun about that, especially here in New Orleans? You know, to chill this down, I mean, dramatically chill it down, the acid level gets much more to the front, mm-hmm. more pronounced. Mm-hmm. It's a great alternative for fish.
Great idea. Especially like redfish that we have here, some of the bolder, meatier fish, I think would be great.
More fatty seafood that you can think, anyway, you know, classic with tuna, salmon, you know, lobster, things of that sort, but all the redfish as well.
Yeah, redfish. Yeah. This is making me picture redfish entirely right now, because redfish on the grill with this would be, I'm fixated on the grill thing, so because I'm talking about the steak before, but this redfish on the grill would be lovely with this wine. This is also very nice. So do you guys do a lot of Franc production and Merlot production as well?
No.
Individually or just blended stuff?
It's my favorite grape varietal, mm-hmm. Hands down. We were just up in Tennessee at a great place, a restaurant up there the other night, and we had a bottle of 100% Cabernet Franc from the Chenon, from a producer that I admire. But it's less, all the planted acres of Cabernet Franc in the whole state of California, which by the way produces 96% of all the wine in North America, is half of 1% is Cabernet Franc.
You know, and Justin, thank you for bringing that up, because that is almost a travesty on some levels. It's a grape that performs very well, I think, throughout various terroirs in California. So I think you can see some nice expressions of it further north than you all, you know, much further north. And then also, for example, a little further north of you in the Central Coast, I think there's some nice expressions of it in Monterey and Salinas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fantastic grape that, in the right conditions, as a single varietal, or, you know, not buried three deep in the blend, can do really well there. And I mean, I'd like to see more of it planted. I see a little bit in Livermore and other places. It's a fantastic grape.
It is. And what's fun about it is that this is the father of Cabernet Sauvignon, the Cabernet hybrid, really, Cabernet Sauvignon and Sauvignon Blanc.
That's are the parents. Cabernet,
absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So I like to tell that story a lot.
Predates Cabernet Sauvignon and it takes its place in historical perspective. I just happen to like it primarily, as I say, for that acid, and it's such a versatile wine with foods. And here with the hot spicy foods, the fatty fishes, it's a great alternative as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. So, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're chatting with Justin Baldwin from Justin Winery from Paso Robles, California. Yeah, kind of not too far from where I grew up, friends. Come on back.
Well, my book has got a hole in it. My book has got a hole in it. My book has got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer.
Hey, ladies. Are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello Wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello Wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Baggio heads up the Small Plates and Charcuterie Kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Yeah, we're spinning some carnival music. Go to the Mardi Gras. You should. It's that time of year. We're here in New Orleans. That's where you should be, friends. Chatting with Justin Baldwin from Justin Winery, who is also participating in Mardi Gras this year as the Grand Marshal of Crew of Cork. Justin, again, thank you for being on the show. Welcome to New Orleans again.
Thank you again.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. So you got yourself a full day tomorrow.
Yes.
At 2 o'clock. Is that right? The fanfare starts before that, but the marching group's at 2 or 3?
They've got me going at 9, but I think the parade starts at 3.
3, okay. Yes. Yeah. Great. So you got to make all the public appearances that you need to make starting at 9.
Well, we'll see. They've told me to be prepared for a long day. We're ready.
That's good. There you go. It is New Orleans. We ask everybody to sort of man up here during Mardi Gras. You'll just have to do that tomorrow.
I'll get my game on.
There you go. That's all there we ask. Go. So, Justin, we're tasting, a flagship wine of yours, right? The Isosceles?
Absolutely. Okay. Just so none of your listeners think I'm a math major. That really refers more to the fact that an isosceles, like all triangles, have 3 sides.
I know that much.
And can you spell it?
Yeah, maybe. Isoceles.
That's pretty good. Pretty good.
I passed high school math.
That's pretty good. So, you know, this is a blend of 3 grapes, and I needed a name I could trademark, and that's where this name came from. It's a classic Bordeaux blend. You add Merlot to tamp down the tannins in the Cab Sauvignon in its youth. Let them, as we just discussed, my favorite varietal come through the Cabernet Franc until those tannins have precipitated out. Mm-hmm. Then you're off and running. The model for this wine is more the more softer, more feminine style of Bordeaux. In fact, if I had my druthers, my favorite wine is Chateau Margaux. That's what I would do. In fact, with the early days when we started making this wine, back in the mid-80s, there were so few producers making these wines. We started a group called the Meritage Association. Mm-hmm. And we literally got together and we traded ideas about what varietals went with which and what percentages, what type of oak to use, how long the maceration should go, a whole bunch of wine geeky things. Sure. I won't bore you with. But eventually, at all level, we figured it out. And in those days, I tell people, you know, there were very, very few producers of blended wines. They weren't very fashionable. Today, it's the fastest growing segment of the wine business.
Right.
Blended wines, whether it's Cab or Syrah or whatever it might be.
Right.
So, classic blend. This particular vintage, from the 2013 vintage, is 75% Cabernet Sauvignon, 16% Cabernet Franc, and 9% Merlot. Like the other 2 preceding wines, it's unfiltered and aged in a little bit over 50% new French oak barrels for 2+ years, and then aged a further 1 year in bottle and then released.
It's also very nice. Nice acid structure on this one. Nice tannic structure, as you said. I get a very pleasant, I'm always careful, Justin, when people sometimes will perceive certain tasting notes as being a bad thing, and when things are managed properly in the winemaking process, it's not a bad thing. There's a very pleasant pepper vegetal note on this that I find very nice.
I think you're picking up the Cab Franc. It's probably, and it's still a very young wine, but that may be what you're picking up. On that, because Cab Franc has some of that veggie character.
Absolutely, and certain Cabernet Sauvignons can as well, as we know, and obviously, you know, Sauvignon Blancs and such. I'm always quick to point that out to listeners, is that when you talk about, for example, I mean, this has nothing to do with your wines, somebody will say asparagus, and there's no note of asparagus. It's not a bad thing. Okay, so a nice bit of vegetable and pepper, especially on a red wine, a red blend like this, when we're talking with the larger Cab family or Sauvignon family, that's a very pleasant note, I find, in these wines.
I agree with you. I think the sort of the misbranding of when you say asparagus, or what people want to sort of denigrate a wine, they're really referring more to whether or not that year was a ripe or less ripe year.
Right.
And because the less ripe, you're going to get more vegetal character, obviously. But varietal-wise, I think what we're picking up in this is you're zeroing in on that Cab Franc portion of it. Yes.
Right. You know, and pyrazine that I think we're talking about, right?
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
And that's not necessarily, again, it's not a fault. It's a pleasant characteristic in a wine when it's in balance.
Yes.
And that's, I think, what we find here very well.
That's the objective. And again, what we're talking about here is the Merlot is hiding the tannins. That's what's doing. And what's coming through is the Cab Franc. And that's what you're picking up.
Very, very enjoyable. What's the approximate, Abe, we're going to ask you because you're the guy with the knowledge. What's the price point on this roughly?
Should be around
$70. Around $70. Okay. And is this available here in the New Orleans market, a restaurant list and things like that?
For many, many years.
Okay. For many, many years. Yes. Great. So there's one last wine that we were going to taste, I guess, right? The Savant, which has a local story.
Well, it's called Savant, and I'll tell you the story. I'll give you the abbreviated version of this. After Hurricane Katrina went through here, I called up my wholesaler at the time and asked them if they were okay. And they said, no, frankly, we're not okay. The warehouse is flooded. Everybody's closed, and we're sort of at a loss of what to do. And I said, well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you come? By then, you know, I figured out the plural of you all. It's all you all.
All y'all. So
exactly, all y'all.
I ingratiated myself. And I said, if all you all want to come out to the winery and make wine, you should come out and do this. And so the sales manager, a guy by the name of George Brown, a gentleman by the name of George Brown, took me up and that came out, worked the whole harvest. And at the end of the harvest, we sat down and I started blending some Cabernet into Syrah. Like they do in Australia. And George turned to me and he said, Justin, this is a really good wine. You should actually bottle a wine like this. It would sell like crazy. And I turned to him and I said, George, I said, are you a savant? You just know those things or are you going to trust? He said, no, but you should call it Savant. So this is an homage to my friend George Brown from the 2012 vintage you're drinking. The actual percentages escape me as I sit here right now, but it's about 80% Syrah. The remainder Cabernet Sauvignon.
It's very nice. Syrah to me is another one of those grapes that we're talking about with Cab Franc that's a bit underserved. And I know people have tried hard in California to make Syrah work, and it doesn't necessarily latch on in certain circles, which I think is a shame. It's a lovely grape when it's handled well. This wine's very nice. Nice leathery note on this, sort of a tobacco note, a leathery note. And one of the things I always like about Syrah is that sort of that earthiness and that animal. But again, there's some nice dark fruit that goes on there as well. It's not the Cab that we're talking about. We're talking about the Syrah here that's bringing that to the table.
Right. Yeah. A little licorice, too.
Yeah.
Some of that comes through. You know, Paso Robles is the highest planting of Rhone varietals in North America. So we've had, over the years, the Hospice de Rhone event there. We've done a lot of things with
Rhone Rangers, right?
Rhone Rangers, yes, yeah. all the above. This is our expression of Syrah, how we work with it. It's, in spite of that, it's only the fifth most planted grape in Paso Robles.
Wow. We need to work on that. Justin, really quick, we got about 15 seconds. Where do people find you online?
Justin, www.justin.com. JustinWine.com.
JustinWine.com. There you go. And you can find it on our Facebook page later on, friends, and before the show. Friends, coming back to hour number two of the NOLA Drink Show. Justin, thank you for being here today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely. Justin Baldwin and Justin Wines. Friends, we're going to be back with Mark Scheller. Come on back.
The good times are rolling at the New Orleans Drink Lab this carnival season. Here, we'll do just that. We'll teach you the history and the tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them yourself. Masterclasses are fun, interactive, and very hands-on. Great for small groups or team-building activities. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience this carnival season. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. 343 Rhone Street.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petite Syrah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose, Coquille Blanc. Cheers. Night before last, I got loaded on a bottle of whiskey. On a bottle of whiskey. Night before last, I
This is Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Welcome to hour number two of the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you, as always, on a Thursday. Happy Carnival, everybody. Happy Mardi Gras season. Yeah, it's that time, and here we are, and we're kind of going, and it's going. I appreciate Justin Baldwin there from Justin Winery being on in the first hour. They'll be walking in the crew of Cork tomorrow at 2 or 3 o'clock, whatever time that one is, through the quarter. And pleased to be joined by my good friend here, Mark Shetler, who is the general manager of Bartonique. He is the president of the New Orleans chapter of the U.S. Bartenders Guild here in the city. We like to say that, well, what I used to like to say is that he is the intergalactic overlord.
I was waiting for that.
You were waiting for that, but it's going to get better. It's going to get way better, bro, is that you are also the Babe Squad Babe of the Week, dude.
It might be longer than the week.
Is it month, or how does this work?
I just hold the crown. I hold the scepter.
You hold the scepter until there's another babe, and then...
Who knows?
Dude, I mean, you broke the internet yesterday, as we were saying, because not only were you the Babe Squad, and if you go check it, I did my research, bro, before you came on the air. So if you go to Facebook and you go to Babe Squad 666, which is kind of weird, little Satan thing, and you go check it out, and dude, so you're like the babe of the period of time, whether it's the week or not.
The reigning babe,
which is great, and some nice pictures of you being a babe there at Bartonique, making drinks, doing this out in front of Bartonique, which is cool. And then you were also, yesterday, on Punch too, huh?
Yeah, Punch Magazine, or Punch.com.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Doing a Ramos Gin Fizz, bro.
Doing a Ramos Gin Fizz. You know who makes great Ramos Gin Fizzes?
Besides you, babe
like
of the month.
Every bar except Tonique. I cannot recommend highly enough going to other bars to order that drink.
You don't want to, you mean when it's busy at Tonique on a Friday, you don't want to run a Ramos Gin Fizz?
I'm just trying to help. I feel like that's a solid recommendation.
That's a solid, and if you don't know the Ramos, well, you know what, dude?
Oh, sorry, I'm trying to help my staff.
You're trying to help your staff.
Yeah, not the listeners.
You know, it was really funny, man, because
we make a great one. I just don't want you to order it.
You do. Yes. All right. So, and actually, you know, man, for people who are listeners, let's just go off on this tangent. Not that we're not going to come back to the babe thing, because we're going to flog that horse for the next hour.
Trying to change the subject.
Dude, nice work. But no. Let's talk about a Ramos Gin Fizz, classic New Orleans drink. And it's a great drink. But let me tell people why, when you're busy six deep at a bar, it can be a little bit of trouble.
It's one that, you know, you can shake however many tins at a time, you can, you know, hold the shape, what, three, four, to whatever. But when you're doing a Ramos Gin Fizz, that's the only drink that you're able to make at that moment. You have to shake it for a pretty long period of time. Usually shake it twice.
Tell people what's in it, too, just so they know why that process
matters.
Our
recipe is pretty standard. Lemon juice, lime juice, Demerara syrup, sugar syrup.
Yep.
Triplum, which is like a lot like Cointreau, heavy cream. Egg white, gin, orange flower water, and soda.
So you've got a lot of ingredients going in.
The other thing that, you know, one of the other things that's frustrating, or that, you know, quote unquote frustrating about it, is when you have something that's using heavy cream and an egg white, you can't just drop it into your rinse water and then pop it back out and start using that tin again. The whole thing has to get cleaned.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of slows you down. And then the fat from the heavy cream is going to get stuck to the tin. Or it gets on the tin, so they're a little bit slippery. The seal's not going to be the same for a period of time until you've washed. So it's a little, whatever. It's not that hard, though. You figure it out.
Yeah, you figure it out.
I mean, part of
right? Okay.
Really what the, kind of, I think what the, like the main thrust of that piece that was in Punch was about, you know, the series is about perfecting a cocktail. And when we, you know, sat down and started to have that, I was like, look, I should, you know, be really honest about this. Like, I haven't spent time, like, trying to perfect this recipe, but I don't think that that's really a reasonable thing to try to do with that drink.
Okay.
We did, by way of, I think, a direct parallel, we did a couple years ago through the United States Bartenders Guild chapter, we had a class just about the Sazerac. We had somebody who was a historian for Sazerac who came in and was like, no, this is the non-apocryphal facts about this drink.
Okay.
And at the end of that seminar, as maybe, I don't know, a dozen, maybe more bartenders, we were at Barrel Proof for this, all kind of lined up all the way down the bar. And just kind of as an exercise, we said, what's everybody's Sazerac recipe? Not one person said the same thing.
Yeah, there's that nice subtle variation on a theme, right?
Exactly.
And it's not a wide latitude.
Yeah, no, and it was all the same. It's like, oh, I do a quarter ounce of simple syrup. Well, I do a half ounce of Demerara syrup. Well, mine is 2 parts sugar, 1 part water. Mine is got gum arabic in it. I'm doing 6 dashes. I'm doing 8 dashes. You know, I do a little bit of
rye whiskey, split base.
Yeah,
right.
You know, but it's the same thing. And so the Ramos is pretty much the same way. Like, I think that as long as you're, so we really talked about the technique.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, where you have the most necessity also to perfect that drink. Because it can be such a pain to make that. You can break down service completely having to make one of those in a busy bar. So it's really important to be able to pound one of those out as fast and efficiently as you possibly can.
Well, and Mark, and to that point, and because it is one that with the shaking is key to create the presentation required for mm-hmm. the drink, right?
And the time.
And
it needs
right.
time to just sit, mm-hmm. you know? And that's one of the things people are always like, it's so funny. They'll be sitting at the bar and be like, they get the same look on their face. And they're like, I hate to ask you this. And you just cut them off right there. And it's like, I will totally make you a Ramos drink this. Don't worry about it. Because it's like, you have to wait. I don't mind shaking. It's whatever. It's like, I'm shaking one drink. I'm shaking 2 drinks. I'm shaking 10 drinks. Like, whatever. Like, as long as I'm not slammed. And I need those tins in the rotation. I don't like, and I can't afford to take
right.
them.
When you
out.
Say, just so people know, when you say tins, you mean cocktail shaker.
Yes,
right?
Excuse
yeah.
me. Yeah.
No worries.
But yeah, other than that, whatever, man. It's your bar. Like, I'm here to give you the service that you want out of your bar. I don't my like wants don't get to come into the equation once I get on shift. So it's fine.
Well, and how long, Mark? You know, because I think there's some perhaps mythology too about that drink where. A certain number of required shakes, and that's not really the case, right?
You shake it till it's done.
You shake it till it's done. And then what do we end up with when it's done? I mean, kind of elaborate on that, because I think people don't understand, because there's a lot of stuff that floats around
yeah,
about that.
You got to
shake
it 12 minutes,
you're right.
Whatever okay. it may be. I mean, yeah. The style of ice that you're using is going to make a difference. If you're using those like large cubes, if mm-hmm. you're using smaller pieces, how much you're using is going to make a difference. Are you shaking it with ice and then without ice? Are you shaking it without ice and then with ice?
What's that going to do to the finish?
But it has to. You're affecting the consistency and how you have whipped the cream and the egg,
right?
Or the egg white?
Okay.
And so that's going to affect the meringue. As you know, once you pour the club soda into the drink, so you've got this like white milkshake looking drink,
mm-hmm.
and you let it sit for a while so that the meringue can separate from the liquid.
Okay.
You've got it is actual whipped cream.
Mm-hmm.
And once that has settled and solidified, then you pour the club soda into it, and the meringue elevates above the rim of the glass. You get a couple inches of this beautiful head that comes above.
And that's
the glass.
What we want in the presentation.
That's what you want.
Yep.
So, that, kind of, I don't know how good it is going to be dependent on a lot of different factors, that being one of them. Your ice, how long you shake it, how you shake it. Some people will pop the spring off of a Hawthorne strainer and put that in there to help beat the egg. There's a lot of different approaches you
right.
can take.
No, and then how do you do it then? What's your
I just
what's
do it the right process? Way, man. I just
well,
do it the right
that's
way.
A great answer, man. I mean, you're giving me the babe answer, but what? So I mean,
I do it however you want it.
Yeah, no, that is even the better babe answer. So what is your thank you, buddy, babe. What is your preference then for ice and then shaking too?
I
mean, you're delivering these drinks when people are waiting.
I get the driest cubes that I can find, the largest okay. driest cubes that I can find mm-hmm. in my ice well, and I'll do, depending on how big they are, either 2 or 3. And it's kind of a law of diminishing returns with ice. At a certain point, you've brought the liquid to a certain temperature,
mm-hmm.
and thereby dilution. But you've brought the liquid to a certain temperature. You're not it's plateaued. You're not getting any more traction out of continuing to shake it.
Okay.
So at that point, I'll dump the ice, and then dry shake it. A lot
okay.
of people do it in the reverse
the other
way.
Okay.
I you know, there are reasons and that both sides have for the reasons they do it, and I think we only have like 45 minutes, so we won't get into those.
Yeah, it's very interesting stuff, and this is why we have plenty of time to talk about these things. And actually, we've deflected the babe stuff enough here through talking about the Ramos Gin Fizz for this segment. So, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, chatting with my good friend Mark Shetler, who is the intergalactic babe overlord of the New Orleans chapter of the U.S. Bartenders Guild, general manager of Bar Tonique. And actually, we're going to talk a little bit more about what we were meant to talk about, which is guest bartender shifts outside of, you know, traveling out of town, going to do guest bartender shifts, a little charitable component to these things. Good experiences. Mark was just in Singapore, so we're going to chat a little bit about that. Friends, a little Down Yonder by Snooks Eaglin. Come on back.
Meet you in town. We go balling with Uncle John.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
It's carnival time. Are you ready for parades, revelry, and the ultimate cocktail experience? Victory is located in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission is to preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy this holiday. Give us a call to book your next private event. 504-522-8664-339 Barone Street.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best kept secrets in wine today. Miro Cellars.
Everybody, Little Queenie and the Percolators, my darling New Orleans. Yes, it is, friends. We are here during Carnival. Brian Diaz here with you, the NOLA Drink Show. We're having a good laugh at Mark's expense during the break. Babe of the week on or month or quarter. We don't really know the time period. It's current. You're the current babe.
Reigning.
On Babe Squad. And a shout out to Babe Squad there. I know
that. Yeah, Carrie, what's up, girl?
Yeah, it's cool, man. She was on our Facebook page today when I shared this stuff. And I know they're going to share the podcast. You know what? We're kind of laughing about, we're talking about this during the break. It's actually a really well presented piece. She did a great job. It's a cool interview. It's really worth checking out. And we're going to put it up. If you go to NOLA Drinks on the Facebook page, just go check it out because the links to the article are there. The punch stuff is there. And then, you broke the internet yesterday. So then the picture in the book that
Sarah Baird's, B-A-I-R-D. She's a local writer who's got a great book that came out on Tuesday. And a friend of mine who doesn't, I think he lives in Chicago right now. He just got the book delivered, and yesterday he had said that it's basically, I think he described it well, it's basically a bartender's yearbook of New Orleans, or a New Orleans bartender's yearbook.
Oh, that's cool.
That it's just not what it was set out to be, but that was his description. I was like, well, that's kind of fair. It's recipes and little short interviews with people, with local bartenders who, you know, I would imagine most people who frequent any of the craft bars or any of the well-known bars in town, you're going to see somebody you recognize in it.
That's really cool. So do we know the name of the book? You said the author is...
I have had just enough wine with you to forget.
Okay, perfect. That works great.
But it's Sarah Baird. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Yeah,
we'll put it on
the link on there.
Yeah,
I'm totally blanking.
Yeah, we'll figure that out during the break. BG, I'll put it up on the station stuff when we track it down, and then I'll put it on the NOLA Drinks social media stuff so we can figure that out too. So really cool, man. So I mean, it was kind of like you were almost like Kardashian yesterday, where you're punch.com and you know, pictures.
Yes, I just figured
book,
I'd go on the radio today. Just people saw all these pictures of me. Now they can put a voice to the
Which is great. You know,
I mean, I try to. It's very. And I'll say it because I know it's on your mind. That's very magnanimous of me.
That was incredibly magnanimous. And I do want people to know this. One thing that I do want people to know is that this is not me jumping on the Mark Shetler Bay bandwagon. I didn't ask Mark to come on the show after I saw him break the internet yesterday. Actually, quite the contrary. We've had this in the cards for a little while. So, Mark, I just want you to know I'm totally not, you know, bandboxing here or doing anything like that. It's you were pre-booked to be on the show. I was going to have you on the show before you were famous or less famous or not quite as famous. But now,
before I made it to the F list.
Yeah, exactly. And now what I'm guessing is that probably had this, I tried to get you on the show yesterday after this all turned out, then you probably would have said, no, I can't come on that show, man. Sorry, I'm too big. Bro. I'm too big for that. Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, Mark, one of the things that we were actually supposed to, oh, cool. Okay, so here's the book. It's called New Orleans Cocktails. Thank you, Molly, for looking that up. Our good pal, Molly Bird, is sitting over there as well, hanging out in the studio, and she's waving, which is really cool. And we're all drinking some wine here.
It is a great wave that she has.
Yeah, she does have that was a really good wave, Molly. Yeah, thank you. And so she dug this up for us. So New Orleans Cocktails, an elegant collection of over 100 recipes inspired by the Big Easy. And the author is Sarah Baird, as Mark said, S-A-R-A-H. Baird, B-A-I-R-D. And I'm going to guess that you can find this on all the major book purveyors.
And all the major book purveyors in town as well.
Oh, and all the good bookstores.
It's all over the
state. Sweet. So go buy a good hard copy of the book, friends, and go support a local bookstore.
Yeah.
That was another side message here too, but that's absolutely important. So, Mark, one of the things that we've talked about how, you know, you are the general manager of Bartonique, and then you're also the president of the New Orleans chapter of the United States Bartenders Guild, we've talked about this on the show before, but what we're really going to talk about today, putting some of this other stuff aside, is one of the things that you like to do, which I think is a really neat thing, is go do guest bartender shifts in other locations. So it could be around the country, it could be international, and then, and there's a cultural component to this. And then oftentimes these things involve a charity, which I think we can talk about in a little bit, but you were recently in Singapore, man. And,
yeah,
and that's got to be pretty cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. I'd never even been to Asia before.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
You know, I hate to make people jealous out there who aren't in our business, but one of the perks of this business is definitely that you can work out ways to kind of see the world if you want to, where if you're not doing that, it's kind of like having health insurance that you don't use.
right. Yeah, that's a good point.
You ought to be taking advantage of these as a bartender. So I got friends in Singapore. It's a thriving expat bar scene there. They speak English. There's a ton of money there right now. excuse me. I'm originally from Los Angeles. So I flew there, did a guest bartending shift for a night, basically had like a 24-hour layover, and then made the 24-hour flight to Singapore and then was out there for a week and did two guest bartending shifts in Singapore and taught two classes.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's great.
It's a neat town. You and I have had this conversation offline before because I've had the privilege of being in Singapore a handful of times.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a very cosmopolitan city. It's an interesting fusion because it sits at the crossroads of Asia in general, Southeast Asia, Indonesia, India, all these places. So the culinary tradition that you get there is remarkable. But then because of the fact that it is a city of commerce and was a well-represented Western world city of commerce. You can also get really good French wine and cheese there, for example, too. It's a really unique place.
We went to a Michelin star, went to a one Michelin star restaurant for dinner one night.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? Much later at like 4 a.m. was eating like, you know, street food.
Hot pot type
stuff. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was like, you know, $3 American equivalent. It was also amazing, you know?
Yeah.
The Michelin dinner was not $3.
Yeah, I'm sure. Singapore is not really, you know, the street food's less expensive, friends, and like we're talking about, but the higher end stuff, it's not a cheap city.
It was really interesting. Like, there seemed to be this massive, like, chasm between, it was like things were either dirt cheap or really expensive.
Yeah,
and there didn't seem to be, I didn't find the middle ground, but, you know.
Mark, and I mean, this is kind of another tangent too. I think in a lot of places like that, that really is kind of the norm. Mm. You know, places like Hong Kong are very much that way. Bali and Indonesia is very much that way, you know, and where there's really not, it's either you got a lot of money and you go do this or you eat really good street food and it's really cool.
Yeah.
And seeing both things, I mean, Singapore to me, the street, there are a lot of places, that is one of the best places for street food that I have ever been to. the Fusion is incredible. Those
were the primary recommendations that you gave me. Yeah, for where to go find that stuff.
Yeah, right on.
Get some Laksa.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
And so now when you went there, Mark, and I think it's a really neat experience that you mentioned it, it's sort of like health insurance that you didn't use. I like that analogy. So it's a privilege, right, to go do this and go pop up and turn up in a town.
Everything
and,
about my job is a privilege.
even shaking a rainbow.
You really feel that
you
way.
You earn it when you shake the rainbow. You're reminding yourself of that.
Yeah, totally. Right? Hey, I get to make Ramos Gin Fizzes a block away from where Henry Ramos used to live.
Yeah, hey, there you go.
That's a privilege.
That is a privilege. So when you went to Singapore, man, so that you said it was the first time in Asia. How long were you there, actually?
1 week on the ground.
Okay. Hey, BJ's playing the music, which means we're taking the bottom of the hour break. BJ's on top of it. I'm just kind of sitting here drinking, shooting the breeze with you, man. So we're going to take the bottom of the hour break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're going to come back. We're going to talk, or we're supposed to talk about with Mark Shetler, guest bartender.
We'll stay on subject.
Well, I'm not going to promise that. Friends, come on back.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucaray. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
The French Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our 6-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music. Enjoy a muffaletta, po' boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmer's market. Check out our pop-up farmer's markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Yeah, a little Ico, but a little bit of the Grateful Dead. Why? Because I'm from California originally. I grew up seeing the Dead.
Same.
Yep, and you too, Mark, is from Mark's from Southern California. So it's my show. I'm going to play the Grateful Dead if I want to. That's how this kind of, I'm the, like we joked last time you were on the show, in my small little universe as the intergalactic overlord of the NOLA Drink Show, I'm playing the Grateful Dead, man. That's just kind of how it works.
Hey, man, that's your prerogative.
That is my prerogative, and so I'm rolling with it. So, dude, we were talking about you know, guest bartender shifts and things like that and neat experiences. So you were in Singapore, awesome stuff. You talked about during the break, which we'll bring this up, and I want to come back to some other things. But, you know, you did a little Mardi Gras theme over there.
Yeah, so one of my the two bars that I did the shift at, they it's in a the Fairmont Hotel, and the hotel was like, oh, we really want to do something kind of big, over the top, whatever. It's like, well, let's do, or they wanted to do a Mardi Gras themed shift. So I was like, all right, we can do that, but like here the terms are, we are not doing the like tourist export version of Mardi Gras, and we're doing like locals Mardi Gras. Like this is gonna be what you see like on Frenchman Street at like 9 a.m. on Mardi Gras. That's what we're going to do.
The real thing.
Yes, St. Anne, like walking Saint parade, right. Mardi Gras.
Uh-huh. Right.
So they had no idea what that meant, which is great. I one of the suitcases that I took out to Singapore was just completely like sit on it to zip to pull the zipper packed with costumes that I borrowed from friends of mine. Just anything you could imagine. There was masks, wings, wigs, sequin, whatever, glitter, boas, you know, like just any crazy thing you could imagine. That an array of printed tights, all different things. And so they have a bit of a large staff there. So when we did the event, we just made everybody on staff dress up like it was actually Mardi Gras. And it was great. I told my description for them was think Star Child. But you came up with the costume while you were on acid, and you executed it while you were drunk.
Yeah, perfect. There you go.
And I was like, that's the proper Mardi Gras costume. That's like what you're wearing the day of.
So now, what was the?
It didn't help. They were horribly confused.
So. I was going to ask. So, what was the reaction to the explanation? And I'm guessing people were like pretty psyched to embrace it. But
they really were. It was really an awesome party. It went like just you know how we had hoped it was. And you and I, oddly enough, are both born on King's Day, on the 6th of January, which, as we all know, the first day of getting king cakes for the season, carnival begins. So unbeknownst to me, because this was in January, about a week after that, they surprised me with a king cake. And the kitchen had made a king cake. It was actually a really good king cake.
So they found a recipe or something online?
Yeah, they found a recipe online, and they made a king cake and brought it out. We shared it with everybody. It was awesome.
That's beautiful. You know, Mark, and actually, you reminded me of something. Probably the first time that you were on the show with me, going back a couple years when I would guest hosting for Tim, Tim McNally on the Dine, Wine, and Spirit show. We had this joke because we were saying we were both born on the 12th day of Christmas, Epiphany, King's Day, so on. When are you and I going to be king of carnival, bro?
It's a great question.
I don't think it's going to happen. Can I come
you
to Singapore?
You got the list right there. Let's figure that out. Targets.
Yeah, we got some parade routes here and stuff like that. But let's figure out. Let's go to Singapore. Can I come to Singapore with you next time, or let's just go be King of Carnival in Singapore?
Totally.
That works awesome. It ain't going to happen. I mean, I'd love to go to Singapore and go do that. That might happen, but not the King of Carnival 100%. Thing. So, Mark, you were in a general sense. So you did this, and it's a wonderful cultural exchange, a wonderful opportunity to go see what goes on in a different place, in a different world,
type of guest.
Yeah, which is
That's
really
great.
Neat. And now, one of the things that you did on the way out, as you mentioned, you stopped through L.A. Near your home. Where did you grow up specifically?
I'm from Reseda.
You're from Reseda. You're a Valley dude.
So yeah.
You're like, this fits in with the babe thing
You know in Clueless when she gets robbed at that liquor store?
Yeah.
I used to go to that liquor store.
Go to that liquor store?
Yeah.
Okay, great. You can go watch Valley Girl, which is more my generation film, Nicolas Cage. Anyway, I'm not going to go down that road. So you stopped through there and you did a guest shift there, and this had a charitable component to it.
Yeah, so different schools of thought on this, but I have thought that it's a little bit gauche when you're going to go do a guest shift to be like, hey, so am I getting paid or what? Like, usually you're doing this with a friend at a friend's bar, and they will tell you what the terms of that shift are. Mm-hmm. The exception would be if you're like, yo, I want to come to your city, but I need to make some money while I'm out there so I can afford to do it. Can I guest shift at your bar? Then it's like, okay, cool, yeah, but like that's kind of the terms of you being here at all.
So getting paid or being part of the tip pool or something?
No, I was in Singapore. I wasn't in the pool. Yeah, I've done plenty where I'm not in the pool.
Okay.
Way more than I have where I am being compensated. Mm-hmm. Way more. But
it's an experiential thing, right?
Yeah,
I think this is what we're getting at.
Yeah,
really.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you put this menu, you know, make a menu of all, you know, all my own drinks for the shifts. And, you know, one thing that was really interesting with that, there was on one of the menus in Singapore and the menu in LA, there was a drink that was, it's one of my own. I'm very proud of it. It's called Cabra Del Mar.
Sea goat, baby. Yeah, Capricorn, right, brother.
It was on my birthday when I was writing that menu and had to name it.
I like that.
Yeah, man. But it's equal parts of mezcal tequila, Sue's, and which is a gentian liqueur, and Coqui Americano. So it's basically a white Negroni with agave spirits as the base.
Yeah, right. I like it.
So in LA, at that shift, you know, packed out shift, could not make them fast enough. In Singapore, same, you know, packed out shift in this bar, one. So that's like one of the things that's really interesting is it's like, oh, like the that's one of the other things you learn, right? Is it's like West Coast in LA, you cannot make enough of this agave spirit drink. You go to Singapore, they just don't drink them there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing that you end up picking up and learning from it too. But as far as getting back to, you know, how the charity aspect of it and things work, I mean, I made the commitment to make that trip. I put the money. I did it because I could. I mean, because I was able to make it work financially. And yeah, it's like gravy to do that, the shift at Harvard and Stone and like make that money. But at the same time, like, I'm cool. Like, I'm a lucky guy. My bills are paid. Like, this is an opportunity to do some, to make a difference in something. And I mean, you know, Molly and I are just coming from one of our and never-ending meetings about some of the sexual assault prevention work that we're
in through the guild, right?
Ostensibly, it's kind of a little bit. We're working on a nonprofit that's going to kind of take it into just the two of us.
Okay, cool.
But
we're going to do a show on this right after Mardi Gras,
hell
right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So we just want to make sure that we're going to get into this little further this topic, but
But anyway, point being that it's like, well, this is work that we're passionate about and we're really moving forward, and it's like, well, all right, well, this is a bar that's had some issues that have, you know, been that have come to light in it. This could be a really powerful moment to bring this charity, it's called Strength United, to bring them into the fold there, and honestly to let the amazing people who work at that bar, like, let's not have that reputation there, because these are good people who actually care about this stuff, and you can't always control, you know, are they to what extent are they to blame for whatever? Well, I was like, okay, well, fine. Well, here's something we can do. We can be, you know, proactive about these things. This is one thing we can come, you know, and no disrespect at all to what we do, but we can come on the radio and talk about this stuff. But rubber has to meet the road.
Absolutely.
A lot of talk in this industry. A lot of talk about in this industry.
Absolutely.
Most of these social justice issues come up, and it's just a hot take. you know, oh, somebody just wants to get their name on it to have their name on it first. But it's like, put your money where your mouth is, dog. And that, I think, you know, it is a privilege to ideally, if I can, you know, supposed to put myself in this position to lead from the front, right? It's like, no, you can do this. It's really easy.
Mm-hmm.
You just donate your tips.
Right, for one shift.
For one shift.
And you're giving money, and you are raising awareness at the same time.
We made a lot of money that night.
Which is great. And that's where, like you said, where the rubber hits the road, and the awareness has a value. And you're raising awareness at that time, where people know what they're buying and what they're giving when they're there. You know, it's an opportunity to educate and teach, right?
Sure. Yeah, I don't. You know,
and I mean that in a condescending way. I just,
right,
you
exactly.
Know,
like not so didactic. But yes.
Think about an issue.
Awareness is I think the really the perfect way to say it. It's like, be aware of this. Be aware of this organization. You know, I mean, be aware that this is for in the case of sexual assault prevention, that this is something that as bartenders we have to address. You know, I've been doing this. This seminar in the last couple months on crisis management and conflict resolution. And when I get to the section on sexual violence in bars, one of the first things I do is ask everybody show of hands, you know, who's been bartending for 2 years, 3 years, four, five, full time, the whole time. Cool. Every single one of you has served somebody who left your bar and got assaulted.
Yeah, I bet. And do you ask the question, how many people have seen it happen or are about to happen?
No. I mean, in that context, when you're talking to a room of however many dozens of people, it's kind of, but the point to drive home is this is our problem.
Yeah.
And
it's a venue, and there are people that come in and are looking to take advantage of that situation.
By miles and miles, the most commonly used drug of influence in drug-assisted sexual assault is alcohol.
Is alcohol, without a doubt.
50% of all violent crime has alcohol involved.
Yep, exactly.
We are alcohol dealers. These are our problems.
Right, right. Know? And that's a really good point. And actually, you know, I do want to emphasize, we're going to take a little break here. I do want to emphasize the fact that the Thursday right after Mardi Gras, which I want to say is March 3rd, we're going to do March 2nd. Thank you. We're going to do a show on this with you and some others.
Yeah, so
others.
I'm just passionate about it.
and it's going to be a really cool show.
Once
so we're
again, off topic, sorry.
No, not at all. It's great. We're going to get much further into that issue, which is an incredibly important issue to talk about. Mark, your points are well taken on that front. We're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Hi, little Dave Bartholomew. Come on back.
Tell me, who drank my beer while I was in the rear?
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
The green room is smoking and the flag is burning down. Throw my baby out the window and let those guns burn down. All because it's kind of a time.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz, your host, here with you. Carnival time. Al Carnival Time Johnson. Friends, if you don't know, you should. I mean, Mark, does that get you in the mood, man?
Hell yeah.
I mean, that song, I mean, that song is just so, I'll listen to that song anytime here, but that song's so spot on.
It's Pavlovian. You get that feeling inside.
Yeah,
you
totally
that.
Do, don't you? I mean, absolutely. And we are right in
the bar is about to be crowded.
The bar is about to be crowded. Exactly. What may happen? I have no idea. Who's going to walk in? Who's going to walk in with beads on 2 weeks before Fat Tuesday? Oh, that Lord. Kind of, red, that sort of thing.
Those are PTSD. That's what you start seeing.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Like you said, you feel right. It's visceral, man. And we are now in that time of the calendar where it's like totally visceral.
Totally.
Yeah, and it's awesome. And this is what makes this place unique. And we were talking about this, not to get off topic again, we're talking about this at the beginning of the show. People that are not from here or have not been here don't get the idea that by like Thursday, Friday of next week, you know, you all have to work.
Even
you're
talking about it, I'm getting look.
Yeah,
like,
and here it comes, right?
Bumps,
here
know?
It comes.
Yeah,
but like a lot of stuff, like you know, you guys are working. You're behind the bar. You're doing stuff when places are open. But in a lot of ways, you know, the world stops here
Hell
for
yeah.
this.
Totally.
So if you're like trying to sell me something, or if you're trying to get me on the phone for a conference call or something like that, dude.
Talk to you after Mardi Gras.
I'll talk
Call
to you
me after,
after
Mardi Gras.
Yeah, what date is that? It's on a Tuesday every year.
Yeah.
And I probably won't pick up on Wednesday because
I'm
going to sleep.
Say, I'll talk to you on Thursday,
yeah, I'll
Friday.
Talk to you on Thursday.
Let's be real. You'll get around to calling me
exactly,
on Monday.
Exactly. Everybody here is waving there. My lovely wife, Sylvia, is here. BJ's here. Molly's here. Another pal of the show and ours. And yeah, we're all kind of like nodding our head. It's kind of obvious. It's like, dude, we're gonna sign off here pretty damn quick. And that's going to be about it. But Mark, we were talking a little bit about, so, you know, guest shifts and bartending. And what we were talking about during the break was something that I wanted to get to too here before we close the show. These opportunities to do some of these guest shifts and these things, sort of taking the show on the road as it were, creates a situation where we can raise awareness and raise funds. And you guys did something recently, and I'm going to tee up here, give me a second, where you went around, did a little bit of a traveling road show throughout part of the South here to raise money for the recent flood victims last year in Baton Rouge and areas in Louisiana. What I said to you during the break, I think is kind of a point I'd like to launch from, is that people are going to go out and drink and they're going to go out and do this. So maybe you come as a guest bartender, or we're doing a special event with people coming from here out of town. You're going to come and you're going to do that. This is going to happen anyway. And this is a great way to raise money for good causes.
Yeah. I mean, the cash is in hand. The tip line on the check is right there in front of you. And it's a lot easier to make that donation in that moment than it is to, you know, go through the mail, write the check, put the stamp on the envelope.
Sign
remember
up
to
online,
take it to the
give
post
on the
stop.
Street.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
All that stuff. Yeah, give on the street. Come on. ain't nobody got time for that. To your point, I definitely agree. And in addition to that ease of getting, you know, the tips that are the I'm sorry, the donation
right,
actually
donations,
made. The awareness element is really important too. You know, I mean, people, I think you're saying people are going to drink, people are going to come to the bar, and I think if you're sitting there, you know, you've got the landscape of bars in front of you, and you're like, I really want to go out tonight. You know what? I heard Tanika has got this charity event going. Like, let's go do that. It, you know, I mean, most of the time it takes very little to do that, and it's really win-win-win-win-win-win-win all the way down. You know, you have this, you're doing a charity guest shift, right? So the charity wins, the guest bartender wins, the bar wins, the guest wins because they get to come and have a special menu and, you know, a heightened environment, and they're getting to give money to a charity. And yeah, I mean, it's great. Like,
it creates a really easy opportunity for all these roads to connect. And one thing that I actually really don't want to underemphasize, which is important here, is that people that are working in the service industry, people that are attending bar, you know, a lot of how you make your living is through tips.
A lot.
A lot.
Only.
I mean, exactly. And so,
$2.13 an hour in New Orleans.
Okay, now I was gonna say, and it does vary state by state and some other things like that. But point simply being that I don't want to underemphasize that when these events go on, people are giving up a portion of their livelihood for the cause. And, you know, I only bring that up again because we sort of talk about, okay, hey, we've got a lot of people coming to the bar. Everybody's doing great. We're giving money to charity, raising awareness about the cause, a lot of money changing hands, going to the charity, things like that. Where, to use your term from the previous segment, the rubber hits the road, is that you folks are actually giving up a portion of your income.
Man, most people I know work 4 or 5 shifts a week. I only bartend 3. I mean, I run the bar, so whatever. But
yep.
I mean, for a bartender who's only only making money 4 days a week to take 25% of the money they made that week and give it to charity. I mean, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
We're not rich.
No, and it's a lot. And that's the point that I want to make sure doesn't get lost in the shuffle here, because we are talking win, 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 win. But there is a sacrifice being made to raise awareness and to raise money.
So this is something, and you know, if you read the Babe Squad article, you'll hear all about this.
Oh, I mean, dude, I let that go, but we're going to go back to that article.
But, you know, I think it's not like a woe is me, we're giving up our tips though, right? I mean, when you clock into work as a bartender every day, you went to work to help people. You went to work to show people a good time, to improve their lives. And I think that the type of person who is inclined to, you know, like everybody who works with the Barman's Fund, an amazing organization locally that does a shift or two every month where somebody will donate all of their tips to charity for the night.
Right.
I mean, they're doing that because they care. And I think that there's something in, you know, in the DNA of these industry people, these hospitality professionals, it's like, no, like I went to work because I want to help people, and this is an opportunity for me to take that even a step further today. So, you know, I think that I am of a mind to make the assumption that most bartenders who are doing this see it as a privilege for themselves as well, you know, because it is. I mean, it's like I am really lucky that I'm in a position where I'm able to give, you know, I work three times a week. If I can give a third of the money or a quarter of the money that I made that week to charity, that's really a privilege to be able to do that, and to be able to share that, to share that with your community, right? Not even just the money, I mean, but to share that experience of knowing that you're helping, knowing that you have engaged in an issue that you care about, and you are going to make a difference today. It's not just a like on Facebook. You did something.
And you know what, Mark, and this is something that we'll talk about we've talked about a little bit in shows past, we'll talk about in the future, is being a part of the community and understanding actually the bar as the salon concept. And we don't really have time to go into that, but that idea of a place of exchange for ideas, a place of social connection, a place for social will, social justice, these sorts of things. There is a tradition for that.
Yep.
And the one thing I do want to say here before we close out the show is that the community here, the service industry community in New Orleans, is incredibly sensitive to this, incredibly active in this.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure that gets highlighted and highlighted well. And we'll do that show. We're going to, of course, do that show on March 2nd, Thursday after.
Can I give a quick plug?
Yeah, real quick.
March 26th, tip out, National Day of Charity to raise money for local sexual assault prevention organizations. More information on that coming, but keep your eyes open for it.
Yeah, and absolutely awesome. Thank you, Mark. And we're going to talk about that on March 2nd, so tune into that show. Friends, happy carnival. We may do a show next week. We may not. I'll let you know if we do. And hey, tune in next week. Podcast will be there tomorrow. And until then, cheers, y'all.